to cover basically what's going on out in California. I think it's a topical matter, not because it affects people in South Jersey or in Virginia in your area directly, but this really speaks to a much bigger problem, which is that, you know, when you make a decision about where you're going to live, location, location, location is the key, because you only get to make that once.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, any time that you build within a floodplain or along a coastal region, you have to accept the fact that you are going to be facing a natural disaster. And if you're not ready for that, then you need to maybe rethink what you're gonna, where you're going to locate.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing. I mean, you and I have talked about it before, but I think this really puts a point on it. You know, when I look at the people in that flood zone, in that area below, where if the dam were to let loose, it would be a disaster of remarkable proportion. I mean, it's, they said it's over a trillion foot acres of water. I think I did the calculation. It comes out to be, it was 1.4 trillion or something. I think when it comes out to be some stunning 174 trillion, 400 billion, whatever. It's a stunning number of gallons of water. Wow. I mean, that's just stunning. And when you look at that, and you look at when we know that from the survival standpoint, if you're going to carry a gallon, it is 8.35 pounds per gallon. That's a lot of power. That is a stunning amount of power. And I was really amused watching people who were pro some of the political arguments in California, who I've seen who've been, you know, pretty hot about how they want to be a sanctuary state and all these things. And because people were basically saying, yeah, how's that working out for you when you didn't pay to fix your dams? And they said, oh, there's nothing wrong with the dam. Are you an engineer? Blah, blah. You know, there's nothing wrong with the dam. Well, I mean, quite frankly, they're pretty worried, because if you saw what they're doing, they're using those big 4x4x4 pallet bags that they fill with rocks and lifting them with helicopters and dropping them on the water side of the containment wall, because they fear that the containment wall was going to let loose. That's not, that doesn't build a lot of confidence in the structural integrity. And it, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you said you were out there, right?
No, I had the same problems with the dam similar to this in Iraq.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, and, you know, the impact, you know, I did a hydrology study of the Tigris and Euphrates, and, you know, I mean, this dam is like 50-some feet higher than the Hoover Dam.
Wow, is it really?
This thing is huge. It's the largest in the United States.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, 770 feet high.
I knew it was big, and I knew it is certainly the largest man-made lake in California. I was looking yesterday at the numbers, and in the Army Corps of Engineers, they went around and they do their annual survey and analysis of bridges and dams and whatnot, and they put pretty much every single dam in California on the list of high risk because they were poorly maintained and needed repairs. So, you know, when they talk about the fact that, quote, the dam itself is not cracked, but the spillway entrance has been eroded, which in hydraulic terms would be cut by water. And when you look at the spillway exit is pumping brown water, which, and I don't claim to be an expert at it, but I've worked around hydrologists and people who worked with the geology and the waterways and whatnot, and they always told me, if it's brown, get worried, because it's eating away the base.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, I mean, water that's coming over the spillway could be brown because of the sediments that are being brought from, you know, from the watershed as well. But there's a couple of things that I've read on here just lately about this. First off, the spillway that it had was concreted, but it was, the water was such that it actually eroded the concrete spillway.
Right. And I saw that it broke
open. Yeah, it went into the emergency, which is not reinforced. It's just dirt. So basically, that's just like, you know, water coming down across the side of your house.
Right. I had reached out to the people in California, but I guess I'm not big enough to get their attention. And I'm sure they're under a lot of pressure right now from the media, but I had looked at the laws on the books in California, and within their statutes and their regulations, the orders for the dams, if I read it correctly, say that way before the point where it got like this, they were actually provided authorization, even if it risked people downline, to release large amounts of water through the emergency spillways and whatnot in order to reduce the level way before it got to this point. So considering that, I would assume, though I may be wrong, that they were already doing that and it wasn't fast enough, or the volume that they could do wasn't enough to cut it back, because it's pretty substantial. If you look at the Feather River downline from it, it's pretty swollen at this point. And they hacked away a gigantic piece of the rock and the dirt along the side by the houses on the one side of the dam on the emergency spillway. It's quite troubling.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the earthen dam is the most susceptible because it's basically just dirt filled in with rock. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of those in, you know, other countries and stuff. But, you know, looking at, and like you, I'm not an expert, but I have spent a lot of time doing a lot of hydrology studies. That spillway, it does not look large enough to, you know, to really do anything as far as draining this, helping to relieve the pressure that's on that earthen dam,
right,
which is the most susceptible to flooding. It's, according to Google Earth Pro, it's about 194 feet, maybe 200 feet across. That's kind of like trying to drain a swimming pool with a straw.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's what I was alluding to, was that, well, the law, and they were probably following that regulation, toot sweet, to try to drain it down. But what they had to drain it down with in no way looked like it was possible to have the volume capability to move that much water to get it out in time. And they're looking at more rain over the next few days there, and they could be in some very serious trouble.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And, you know, the other article I read, there was supposedly three engineering outfits when this particular dam came up for recertification or whatever, and they all said, you know, these three companies said, hey, this thing is not ready, but it was going to cost, I forget the exact number, but it was in the millions, to actually get it fixed. So they decided that it was too costly to take the steps that were required to bring this up to the code in order to make it safe. And, you know, this alludes to something else that I always have had a problem with. Especially being in the Army, where human lives are weighed in the same balance as money. I don't see how that's possible. And, you know, where do you make the decision that it's not worth the cost to this risk brings to you just because it's going to cost some money. To me, that's just, there is no value that you can place on a human life.
Right, and of course, well, and as you know all too well, having been out of the United States, many countries, there's zero value placed on life, whether it's monetary or otherwise. But we've always presented that we consider human life to exceed the value of anything else. But sometimes I wonder, I guess it's my somewhat cynical perspective, having been around a bit. You know, I said this before, and I got a lot of grief over it back in the day, having done tons of investigative work down in Louisiana. I used to ask my friends down there who were in the police and the sheriff departments down there and the state police, and I would say to them, where do you live? And they'd all say, why? What do you mean? And I'd say, do you live out in New Orleans or do you live inland? And they'd all laugh and look around and go, you don't think we'd live there, do you? Of course not, because it's 7 feet below sea level. And anyone with a brain would not spend any money to put their stuff or their life or their family at 7 feet below sea level. It only goes to show that you're going to get in trouble at some point. And I'd ask them, well, why do they let them keep building? It's like up here in New Jersey, they have the barrier islands. They did it in Maryland along the East Shore. They, in the 60s, they got whacked by, I think it was Agnes, wiped half of the boardwalk off into the sea. So they built these barrier islands. And all of a sudden, they let them build houses on the barrier islands 15 years later. They forgot that they were built in order to let them be washed away so that the houses wouldn't get washed away instead. Hello?
Right.
You know, and but what strikes me is they do it, and then they cry, and they get on TV, and, well, I'm a victim. Oh, it's horrible. Oh, the government has to pay. Why does the government have to pay? Yo, bud, yeah. You want that fancy house up on the stilts? It has to be two stories up on stilts, or it's going to be underwater half the time. And you want to be able to brag to your friends they can come down and party in the summer? Then you pay for the insurance that's going to pay to fix that, and good luck finding somebody who will. Because it's so frustrating. And I sometimes sit back and look and say to myself, because as a risk manager, I look at it and say, look, there's no way. I couldn't even put this. This is on a scale of 1 to 100. This would be at 2. Why would I put my house down line? Look at those houses in the videos that are live. I have one of the live stream from the local TV show right on the page for today's show. It's already posted up there. And it has a live stream, YouTube live stream capture from earlier. And they have other ones that are ongoing and from yesterday. And you could see those gigantic boulders cutting away from the side of the mud wall. And on the other side of the tree, there are the houses.
Yeah.
What, you know.
I was looking at, I'm not sure what SFGate, I'm not even sure what it is. It's a website on here that's got some pictures of that river.
Mm-hmm.
In the River Bend Park on Google Pro, I'm looking at the River Bend Park and then I'm looking at the image with the water. There's a pavilion. That's about 300 meters, 280 feet from the river, and the water is almost to the roof line of that pavilion.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's probably at 280 feet from the river edge. As it is right now, not the center, but just edge the bank.
Wow.
It's about 280 feet, and it's about 8 feet high. So, you know, I mean.
And that's a waste.
You should let out of that thing anymore. It's almost to.
Yeah, and I'm looking on Google Pro Earth Pro also right now, and I'm looking where you're talking about versus where that dam is. That's a pretty long distance away.
Oh, yeah. It's
Wow. Yeah, and that's there's a lot of bends and curves too.
5.5 miles straight line.
Mm-hmm. And it's not called Riverbend Park because it's a straight line from the down from there either. That river bends twice before it gets there. Some pretty significant bends. It's really something. And you know, speaking to the bigger picture, whether you're talking about there or whether you're talking about living on the shore or, you know, or in Louisiana or Corpus Christi. I was down there. I remember one time I was doing a job down there, and I said to one of the sheriffs, I'm going to run the spillway, because they had a gigantic, it's like an aqueduct. And he said they spent, I forget how many, $50 million or whatever to build this one aqueduct because it kept flooding. I think that was actually, may have been Houston. And I said to him, wow, it really floods that much. He said, yeah, and this is going to solve it. And I actually ran the rental truck down through it to get, like, you know, I had rented a four-wheel drive. And I was using it to get point A to point B doing a surveillance. And I thought to myself, this thing was 80, 100 feet high on the sides. And I was down almost in the center. And then the week after I left, and they had a really bad rain, and he told me it flooded up over the sides. And like, wow, okay. And he said to me, yeah, and they built the new police station right down at the bottom of it.
Like,
yeah. Okay. Wow. Whose idea was that? I bet they said, wow, we can get this property really cheap. That's why, you know, like, what are you thinking? Yeah, Bill Engvall. And that's the thing. I mean, for people who believe that they're preppers or preparedness people or survivalists, whatever, and they do, and they go buy all these toys, and they look at Survival Life and these other people who inundate you with these idiotic, worthless things, with these clickbait headlines and emails every day. Oh, you need this to survive. Oh, buy this. And, you know, buy a credit card knife, you know, that they'll take away from you when you get to the airport and you know, whatever. And then, like, but they don't talk anything about, hello, maybe you should think about the simple things. Like, where do you live? Do you live under a bridge? Right now, Guy, there's a bridge. You may have actually seen it because I think it hit the national news. It's known as the Delaware Valley Bridge. It's a little north of Philadelphia near Bristol, PA. And it's owned jointly between the Pennsylvania and the New Jersey Turnpike Commission. And it links at exit 6 on the New Jersey Turnpike and the easternmost end of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. And it links New Jersey and Pennsylvania there. And it's very heavily used for people who are coming across Pennsylvania Turnpike and going north to New York. It is currently closed. And right now, according to the stories that are out there, they're afraid that in a really bad windstorm, that the bridge would fall over. I mean, we're not talking some rickety two-lane bridge. We're talking, you know, a big, massive span that goes across this river. And when they were afraid that pieces or the whole portions of the bridge in the bad windstorms would come down on the houses below. And they have houses built literally under it.
Wow.
You know, and this is where I start. I did a show last week, I guess it was, on the difference between the rural slash suburban mentality versus the urban slash the urbanish suburban people who are right on the edge mentality, and how they have such a totally different view. How when you are an urbanist and you're a consumerist and you're built into that, I don't need to own a car, it's a waste, and I can take public transportation and blah, blah, and it's leaving everything in the hands of someone else, that this is what you get. And now they feel so comfortable because city property is so tight and there's so little space that they build houses all right along the edge of, and in some cases under the bridge, without the, you know, with no thought to the fact that, hey, there's this thing that's so big. You know, it may sound silly, but when I was a kid, I used to have a reoccurring nightmare of a truck going by, a very big truck, with tons and tons of telephone poles on it, and the telephone poles fell off and rolled down over my house and crushed me. And it repeated over and over and over. Somehow I have no feeling of comfort of saying there are girders there that it took two cranes that are that do 900,000 pounds to lift them into place or right over top of my house. I don't think I'd stay there. I just can't see it.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the services I provide is site evaluations. And as part of that, I look at all of that stuff. You know, what types of other disasters could be or could occur within the area that you're looking at or that you live. When I do the site selection, which is if you are looking for a place, those are considerations that I take into account so that this doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would tell probably the same the folks in New Orleans the same thing as I would somebody in California. Either be ready or get out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not a question of if, it's a question when.
Right, right.
And, you know, when Mother Nature is enemy number one, you're going to lose every time.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is that, like, and this is why it irks me so much when I hear people, because this mostly happens, like this area, there are lots of trees and all that, but these people here still have that urban mentality, that mentality of that man is the master of his environment, never recognizing the fact that we're basically visiting here and that every one of the earthborn bases are powerful enough to wipe you off of the face of the earth in a blink of an eye. And,
right.
You know, it's really stunning to me. I don't know if you noticed, but, you know, there's a second dam. I don't know the name of it, but it looks like maybe even a another breakwater dam or a hydroelectric.
Can you talk about that diversion dam that's just south of
Yeah, just south of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a diversion dam. I was going to bring that up because irrigation system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's diverting part of that river into this lake.
Right.
Rio Forbe.
Yeah, and then there's another diversion dam down that almost looks like it may have hydroelectric with it, maybe. It's got a pretty big operation there. It looks like it might be hydroelectric.
Yeah, it could be. That one. Yeah, there's another smaller dam there.
Mm-hmm.
Bridge.
Yeah, it's a hydroelectric. I just went to look. It's got a hydroelectric on it. But the bottom line is, in the overall topic, is that this merely is an opportunity to look at exactly how this whole thing plays together and how all survival in the end is mobile survival. If you can't be mobile, you're not going to go anywhere. You're not going to make it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing. When you're getting ready for whatever event it may be, you know, you need to have in the back of your mind your secondary, your backup plan, because, you know, that area may become untenable.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're living in areas like these where you already know there's potential for problems to occur, you know, people just need to think. You know, there's no, all this stuff that's going on, like, you know, this climate change or global warming or whatever the heck you want to call it, it's not, the problem is not the warming itself. The problem is, man has built in areas that they shouldn't be building in.
Yeah.
And you know, when that happens, then the event catastrophic. I mean, for example, if, because this was a floodplain for this lake, if nobody was able to build within that region, there would not be any problem.
Right. Well,
because when the water flows over, it would have nothing there to destroy it. But because we have built there,
mm-hmm.
now it becomes a problem.
Right. And of course, so this breaks two ways. So I've talked about this on the show before. When you talk about these people who are in the UN, and it's kind of connected with that whole, it's not called the Agenda 21 anymore, but the premise of it, you know, the premise of it, though, actually isn't so unsound. The idea is that they want to move 80% of the people into 20% of the land because they know that the more compacted the populace is, the less they're going to desire to just free range and just have like 80 kids and not care and the populace explode. Because when you've reached a point where you're surpassing what you can provide to keep them alive, you're not thinking, well, gee, I'll just go somewhere else and start again and it won't matter. You'll actually live within your means, which is something that's been MIA out of a lot of the world that we know right now, is just living within your means. And I think right. that's one of the, you know, I think that that is one of the most healthy parts of adopting a survival preparedness mentality. You want the readiness. That's something that's in your category. You want the preparedness, which makes begins with a mindset, and the mindset actually builds where you become more of not a minimalist like Cody Lundin running around in, you know, in bare feet and loincloths, but somewhere in between where you say, gee, you know, I live within my means. I find my life to be more fulfilling and happier because I'm more connected with the things that are real and that I feel good about and yada, yada, yada. You know, and I think that that's where we have, by the way, just a little side note, right across from the Riverbend Park on the other side, in between the irrigation section of that lake and where that park is downline from actually what would be pretty much a straight line if it decided to really let loose, is the airport.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I noticed that too.
Because the Oroville Airport is right there. But, you know,
yeah.
I don't know if you noticed, but this is, and the reason I wanted to talk with you about it is because listeners need to get the handle. It does not matter where you are in the world. The beauty is, you've talked about it before, Google Earth Pro is now free. You used to pay for that. It
Correct.
Comes with everything, and you can pretty rapidly get a handle on how to use it. It does 3D building renderings. You can go down at street level and move around. You can measure like you just did in 10 seconds across the map and get a full read from that. But what you can also do are some other things, which I find very intriguing, is download lists of place marks from other people. For instance,
right.
Dutch Sintz, who I've talked about before, I think even with you, Dutch Sintz, who's been getting a lot of grief, but I'll tell you, in the 4-some years I've been following him, he's called, more accurately called, the likelihood of an earthquake than missed. And in Italy, he's almost a god there now because he warned and called 3 days in advance almost every one of those major ones that happened there that were super, super destructive. But, you know, one of the things that he covers a lot using Google Earth Pro is look what you're seeing right down line, literally around the corner from the dam, and it's called Butte Valley. And then there's a town called Butte. Most people don't know what buttes are, but buttes are steam vents from dead volcanoes. And
right.
2 days ago, a day and a half ago, Dutch Sintz, using the same scientific calculation that he's used accurately over and over, looked at a series of earthquakes that happened up in Alaska and down in Mexico and measured the point in the center of the silent zone, and it literally put it in Placerville, which is right around the corner from there. And most of these major earthquakes that happen in buttes or in old volcanic areas. because there's been a lot of new activity in them. We have new ones in Georgia that have popped up that they didn't even know existed. And he has called for the possibility of a 5.0 in Placerville. It would be within a stone's throw of where that dam is. And it could be right around the time that the second wave of water comes. So there are lots of things to think about. And people need someone like you, someone like me, who are going to look at these things and be able to say to them, let me tell you, there's some things you may not know about where you're looking. As they say, oh, but it's so pretty. Oh, well, it's so nice. You're right on the edge of this or whatever, but you're missing that you're going to fall off into the ocean or something. It's, you know, it's quite stunning. But, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
The problem with the mentality of just plopping someplace else, you know, or plopping down somewhere without really looking and evaluating the area is, you know, it's kind of like taking off in your car or something and not making sure you have enough money and food and gas to get across to where you're going. Or, you know, even better, it's like trying to start to build a house without making sure that you have, you know, all the resources that you need in order to finish the house.
Yeah.
You know, you get started and you get only halfway done. It's just not smart. You know, I was wondering while we were talking, because, you know, we were talking about the earthquakes and stuff. I wonder if this has anything to do with the, that crack that's opening in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what if you look on the earth, and for the listeners, just so you have like a handle on this, if you don't know, go to my Practice Survival page, go to useful information and tectonic plate tectonics. I have a whole area where I give a lightweight explanation so that you get a kickoff on it to understand. See, here's the thing. If you look at the Earth and the tectonic plates as it's been taught in geology and tectonic sciences for years and years, there are these major plates, and they've always looked at where we are in the United States as being the lucky ones because we basically are on one large plate, which is a North American plate. The western edge, leading edge of it is out right at the edge of the continental shelf. A little part of it jams against the Juan del Fuca plate up in the very northern section by Washington State. And that's where the Cascadia subduction is, but it basically runs along there, comes around, and all the way doesn't come back up until almost it's on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, two-thirds of the way across the Atlantic Ocean toward England. So most people consider that that means that we're good to go, we don't have to think about it, but that is not actually the case. Because when you look on there too, you'll see on one of the pages I have a markup of the North American Craton. And the Craton, interestingly enough, literally runs straight down from where the big earthquake happened in Alaska, straight down through Washington, Oregon, and straight down through Riverbend Park. Continues on down around on the plate, and it's basically like a plate on the plate. And that one is the one that when it bends back around, when you look at the, like on Google Earth, and you have it in the topography map where you can see the topography, you can actually see how in Missouri it comes back up, the Craton loops back up, and it goes to where the New Madrid, what in New Madrid, and it's where the New Madrid Fault event happened, where I have a whole write-up also there about it. You can click on it and read if you don't know, where the Mississippi River actually ran in reverse for several days, sucked boats and barges up in, took trillions of gallons of water and sucked it down into a hole in the ground and then refilled it. It almost emptied Lake Michigan at one point, and So, and then it comes back down around through Georgia and straight up the East Coast along into Maine along the Appalachian Trail. And why does this matter? Because it hadn't really been identified to have moved since a New Madrid, but it moved 6 feet, or I'm sorry, 9 inches about a year ago. And it shifted, it twisted. And when it did, we had several small and mid-sized quakes that are rather unusual along North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and whatnot, and a few in the Pennsylvania and a lot up in Maine. This is a big warning sign because the Salton Sea, which is down in the lower end of California, has been having some very strange events in it lately, and the USGS has covered it, but they haven't earmarked it as anything more than, oh, look, isn't that interesting, and left it at that. So it's our onus of responsibility when we make a decision where we're going to live to pay attention to these things and be educated, or get someone like you or me so they can pay attention for them.
Yeah, it's I don't know. There's a lot of factors in that exist outside of just buying stuff, guns, weapons, and, you know, food, water, and storing it somewhere. You know, because if you have, you know, everything that you could possibly need, but it doesn't sit on a place that's safe, then it's useless, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the first show, Tremors.
Oh yeah, love that movie.
You know where
Bert.
With Reba McIntyre and whatever.
Yeah, Bert. Right, Bert.
You know, basically he's like, you know, the ultimate prepper gun nut guy. You know, he's got like guns that he boils the artillery pieces, but you know, in the end, even that safe place, and I'm doing air quotes here, was not safe because the ground underneath of it was vulnerable.
Right.
So looking at all the aspects is, you know, really the only way that you can ensure that you have factored into your plan all of the different pieces and parts that really could impact you and your family.
Right, and that is the key. I mean, that's the whole reason I wanted to bring you on. I did want to cover the dam because it's topical, but because underscoring it really brings it to a much bigger picture, which is that, you know, wherever you are, you cannot rest on your laurels to say, okay, nothing's ever happened here. I don't know, you know, everything's cool. Okay, well, what do you mean nothing's ever happened? Define nothing's ever happened. This is the beauty you can start out with. I did this with somebody a few months back, took them on Zillow and Realtor.com, said, okay, here you go. In 3 clicks, type in the address where you want to go, roughly. Now, click here. What is the criminal history, the crime history in that area? What are the number of homeowners insurance payoffs for flooding, for fire, for this, for that? Because you'll never in a million years think of all the things. But if you look at something like that, you go, holy crap, where did they get the brush fire from? And then you look out the back window and go, oh, okay, I see where they got the brush fire from. You and I were, you know, you and I were talking about a location that we had both looked at where they had a prepper show down in Virginia. And I was saying to you how much it troubled me that to the left of me, there were, I think it was 2 nuke plants within 10 miles. And
Maryland,
that's right. And we were surrounded by water. We were like 6 feet above sea level. And they were building a compound to bug out to.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I was like, yeah, that's not exactly what's your backup.
Right. I hope you have a really good one. And does it include having a bullet train that you jump in a tube that's waterproof and you blow out and end up in, you know, Iowa or something? Because I'm waiting.
I'm hoping it includes a boat.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, this is the sad, sad part of this. I saw a prepper group who I know some of the people and who I like and respect were having a bug out activity this coming weekend, I think, and they are in New York City. I'm sorry. I was in New York City at 911 and right after it for 3 months working down there. We had clients all over, you know, literally downtown, two blocks away from there. I was there almost every day. If I wasn't getting paid to be there and people were counting on me to help them, there wouldn't have been enough reason for me to ever, ever, ever want to be there.
Yeah. That's not my first choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some locations, I mean, I know we can't always pick, where we live or where we settle. You got to be close to the job, whatever. But you have to at least be cognizant of what what natural disasters could potentially be in that area and be ready to get out of Dodge. Because, you know, in New York, the classic example, there's like a financial collapse. I just cannot see that being a good situation. There's just too many variables that you just don't control that are going to...
Right. Well, and when you add that many people in such a tight proximity, it's just not going to go well. And I think there comes a point where you have to say to yourself, okay, I want money. I want to have this. I want to have that. It's where I'm actually writing a book. I'm in some pretty heavy throes of it right now because of what you and I had a conversation about last time. And I've been, you know, smashing it around for the final versions. I've like put it together in pieces over the years. And one of the things that gets me is that, you know, at some point, it becomes valuable to say, okay, what are my wants and what are my needs? How much are these wants worth for me to make it worth me giving up my freedom, my peace, my calm, my sleep, my, you know, having added stress, whatever? What are those things? And but in the world we live in, I heard it today. I was listening to it on my favorite morning business show on Varney. They were talking about the Apple iPhone 7, whatever version it is, and their stock pop today and blah, blah. It's a phone. It's got but it's got 3D capability, so it's going to make what? Who gives a rat? Really? Seriously? Get a computer or a gaming box and hook it up to your 4K TV and have at it. Who the hell wants a little tiny 6-inch screen to do that, really? And they said it's going to be over $1,000. Hello? What can you do with that $1,000? I would be willing to bet you money that a third of the people who are trying to figure out right now how they can finagle that new iPhone 7 for a grand plus might need brakes and oil change and some tires on their car.
Yeah.
That they've been putting off because they don't want to spend the money. This becomes the key to the bigger problem, which is where is it? Where is your peace? Where is your happiness? I was just writing a whole, you know, chapter on just that whole thing and about how you make the decision point where you say to yourself, all right, hang on a second. How much do I really need that? How much do I really want this? Do I want to wake up in the morning and walk out and sit on my porch and look out across the mountaintop and breathe the fresh air and hear the hawk screech? Do I, you know, or is my paradigm sitting on the balcony of the 15th floor of my condo in the city that cost me $40,000 a year to rent, and hear the noise and the fire trucks and the ambulances and the police and hear gunshots in the background and go, oh, isn't it beautiful? It's not my paradigm, you know? And I recognize and respect that it is not everybody's paradigm. But from a standpoint, if a person thinks and wishes to be taken seriously, that they're a prepper, a survivalist, the preparedness, they want readiness, then they have to consider that those things take precedence. It's, do I want to have, a dehydrator or a freeze dryer for $4,000? Or do I want to piss away $4,000 and take the family down to Disney World and Universal Studios? I don't think I have a problem figuring out which the answer for me is. But, you know, this becomes a question. And that's where it all comes down to. Most people want that easy answer. They get that email in the mail. Oh, buy this. It'll tell you everything you need to know and you'll be all ready. And they buy it and they never even open it, or they read the first 5 pages of some PDF book that they bought for $22.95, or if they were smart enough to say leave, and then they say, will you stay? Yes. And it goes from 69 to 49 to 22, and, you know, or 27, whatever it is. And then, oh, I got a great deal, and you get it and you never even use it. What good is it? You know, you need real things where the rubber will hit the road, where you can actually make yourself safe and your family and those important to you. That's the key. I think that's really where it comes down to.
Yeah, what's your priority?
Right, right.
Survive not only the physical stuff, which is basically what we're talking about, but the mental and the spiritual. That's why, you know, that holistic approach that you and I have talked about. Because being ready for an event is really it's a full-time job. And if you're not ready, then you need to probably talk to somebody who does know, so that you can be totally ready. Because, you know, buying these books, buying this stuff, yeah, it's all fine and dandy until something happens. And then, you know, those are the first ones to be hollering, oh, well, where's this, where's that? Why can't I find this? You know, but they haven't really looked at even what they had. So something does happen, it's just, you know, they're out of luck.
Yeah.
That's not the time to learn things about.
That's for sure. And there, yeah, there was an interesting YouTube video topically of people at the centers where they were evacuated to. I mean, they evacuated 180,000 people. Two nights ago, while they were helicopter dropping bags of tons of rocks in to try to shore up the wall, the spillway, they were demanding to be allowed to go back to their houses in the flood zone. This is, and in fairness to the people in emergency management, this is the nightmare. I mean, this is the nightmare. They know what the threat is. They've been probably telling people for years. The mayor's gone, shh, you're going to ruin business here. Nobody's going to want to come here, and we're going to lose tax revenue. Shh, shh, you know, don't do that. We're going to be a ghost town. Be quiet. Go fire him. He's, you know, they start doing whatever, hunting their emails to find some reason that they have to let them go. So they'll get a lackey who will go, oh yeah, everything's cool. I drank the Kool-Aid too. It's all good. This is the problem. And, you know, for the real professionals who are standing down there, I was looking at some of them. They got to be going, dude, why am I standing here? I've been telling you this for like 15 years. Why are we at this point now? You know, and you know they've got to be taking crap because they're the ones who actually do something. So everybody gets mad at the ones who do things because, of course, it's got to be your fault.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, on Jaws. You know, Jaws, they, you know, wanted to evacuate the beach, but, you know, that's not kosher, I guess, during tourist season.
Yeah.
So, you know, instead of, which goes back to that, you know, what we were talking about earlier, being, you know, where do we put the, you know, where, with the dam, they were told, this thing is potentially going to fail, you know, same with that bridge you're talking about. You know, these are issues that we know are coming, but, you know, what are we, you know, how are we going to fix it? Well, to me, the answer appears to have been, let's just put our heads in the sand and hopefully it'll go away.
Right, or we'll dodge the bullet until we're out of office so we don't have to be the ones that take the crap for it. That's really, and you know, I started out in the beginning saying, you know, the Twitter feeds and Facebook feeds on this have been crazy, crazy. And there are a lot of people there who have been implying or outrightly accusing, you know, that they intentionally allowed this to happen because they want to get federal funds to cover this and then let the feds come in and fix it. And the funny thing is our president just signed executive orders a little while ago, giving the freedom for the states to have control of this all over again. And honestly, I think that's what it should have been from the start. We did not have these spiraling $1 trillion hits to cover things like Katrina and Sandy and all that, where this attitude of the average person is, ooh, let me come in and get a piece of this free money, when it was the states, because the states were going, hey, look, this is it. This is all we got. After that, you're SOL. You're on your own. So don't move back there. See, I think every time these things happen, if they get a cent of federal money, they should sign off that they'll get a stipend that says, here's what you lost, have a nice day, go away, we now own your property, it's turned into a national park. Shove off. And because at that point, like you said, if that was the case, if the dam failed, who'd give two flying flings? You know, but that's not what they do. They come in and there's all this political pressure and all this crap that goes around, and basically what you end up with is, you end up with a situation where they cave and they end up spending our money to pay someone who lived large, was able to brag that they lived in this area and it was so beautiful and you're living in this crappy place, but we live here. And then when it's all screwed up because they were stupid, then we foot the bill to let them live that way again. And it's just not right. It's really not right.
Yeah, that's definitely not... You know, if it's been impacted once, then in my opinion, that should never be
applicable
again.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you coming on with me today, and hopefully it added something. You know, we added something in the mix in this conversation for people to think about, because as you know, Guy, and I'll put his information up on the site again for today's show later. You know, you need somebody like him. You need somebody like me to consult with you, to help you pick a few $100 here and there to help you find out how not to get yourself into the trouble of buying and having to not be able to leave. It's worth every penny.
Yeah.
So
I think so.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I appreciate it. Guy, thanks so much, and I'll catch up with you later.
All right. Thanks, bro.
All right. So in the last few minutes, I just want to kind of recap the point that, you know, while we were talking about this specific incidents there in California, it really it steps to a larger issue. We have dams all over New Jersey, all over Pennsylvania, all over Delaware and this listening area, plus everywhere else around the world that listen to this show in the both replay and on the live stream. Please pay attention. Use Google Earth Pro. I'm going to actually do a show coming up on Google Earth Pro, I might actually bring Guy back in because he's really an expert at it, to try to enlighten you a bit and post some things to help you know how to use it so you can look at the area around you and be able to target what the threats are so you can be proactive and be able to take care of yourself. It is all in your hands. Proactivism is the key. Proactive means you don't wait for it to happen, you act ahead. And that's what you need to do. You hear me say it all the time. There is no disaster when you're prepared. So I am Will Hemingway. This is Practice Preparedness. Visit us online at the website at practicepreparedness.com. As always, I will post this show rapidly for you to replay. If you missed part, you can always play it back again. So go to practicepreparedness.com and visit Practice Survival and all the other sites that are connected. Until next week, we are out of here. Be safe. Be ready.